Okay, there we go. Now I better get... It's...
Your rank is major, am I right?
Retired.
Retired, right. And the initials?
G.
G, and it's...
Gilles.
G-I-L-E-S.
The name I use.
P-A-R...
P-E-R-O...
Oh, damn.
D-E-A-U.
P-E-R-O-D-E-A-U. Yep. Good. And this is an interview then with Major Perdeau on, what, the 4th of March, 1985. Got my ears right, anyway. By Dr. Roy, the University of Victoria. And away we go. You're on tape. Now, right. Enjoy your coffee. This is just sort of a casual conversation. Uh-huh. Well, and what I want to do, you know, before we leap right into your time with Fancreer, is get a little background on you if I can.
Mm-hmm.
Were you in the militia, for example, before the war?
No. I was in the cadet corps at school. I went to Lower Canada College, and we had a pretty active cadet corps.
Yeah.
With Major Cutbush, who was an ex-guards sergeant major.
Yeah.
And he was militia. He was excellent.
Yeah.
And so I had an interest in the military, and I enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't join at the outbreak of war. I was working for Canada Steamship Lines, and then I went to work for CIL, and immediately I tried to, very shortly afterwards, I tried to get in the Navy, and went to Drummond Street, HMCS, I forgot what,
something.
Donnacona.
Yeah. This was incidentally in Montreal or Quebec?
It's in Montreal.
Ah,
yeah.
Right.
And I paraded 2 nights a week, I think.
Yeah,
was.
That's right.
And eventually a delegation came from Ottawa to select 30 of us for active service,
yeah,
for the training. And I remember the captain coming around, and his method of selection was to walk up and down the ranks, and we were all standing stiffly to attention. And he just pointed fingers.
So it's like that.
Like that. So they selected 30 of us. I was selected. I don't know why.
Well, now, how long had you been in the cadet corps by this time?
Yeah, this was
in the ranks?
In the ranks. It was an officer training thing, but it was a 3 months, I think. I remember taking a course at McGill for navigation,
yeah,
for piloting.
But this was a reserve outfit. In other words, you were civilian,
mm-hmm,
attending the evening,
mm-hmm,
class, or
yep,
the usual.
And
theater.
We were, you know, we weren't in uniform yet, because we were all just hopefuls.
Yeah.
And we, as I say, prayed once or twice a week. We do drill. They teach us how to behave in the wardroom. You don't stand and don't scream and that sort of thing.
Right.
And then eventually, the 30 were selected, and we were interviewed by this team that came from Ottawa, and I was told I was too young.
How old were you?
I was 19, but I was too young for this particular bunch.
For officer rank.
For officer,
yeah,
training.
Well, that, if I can interrupt here, that's the same with the Army. I
was it 19?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. I joined up when I was 16, and I, you know, I was Boy Roy.
Mm-hmm.
And then it became Private Roy, then Sergeant Roy, and I was overseas. But it wasn't until 1943, when I was 20, that I could go in for.
Oh.
Yeah, so 20 was the age, evidently, in the Navy, too.
Oh.
There, we learned something.
Yeah. How
about that?
Anyway, I asked if I could stay on. They said, by all means, because my birthday, 20th birthday, was 31st of December.
Mm-hmm.
You had
gone through Lower Canada College.
Yeah.
Now, you hadn't got on to... Whoops. Would you press that center button, that big, broad button?
Yeah, I should have got you to press it. Yeah.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, so there you are.
All piddly.
Yeah.
Expecting to be an officer, and they allow you to remain.
Remain.
Yeah.
And I think I attended for another month or so. Then I heard that the Royal Montreal Regiment, which was located in Westmount, as you may know.
Mm-hmm.
They were raising a second battalion, which was going to be NPAM.
Yeah.
But also provide reinforcements,
mm-hmm.
officers for the 1st Battalion, which had gone overseas with the 1st contingent.
Ah, yeah, yeah.
And my uncle, quotation marks, was to be the CO.
Uh-huh.
He wasn't an uncle, but he was related by marriage. So I went to see him, and he said, by all means, do join us. So I joined the 2nd Battalion, and eventually, it was a long wait. Eventually, we went to Brockville,
mm-hmm.
in August of 41.
Mm-hmm.
And then overseas in end of May of 42.
Mm-hmm. Now, you went with this 2nd Battalion,
mm-hmm.
and when you say eventually you went overseas in 42, you went overseas in the reinforcement stream.
Right.
For that unit.
Yes.
Right.
For the unit.
Got it.
You know, we went to Brockville, then we went to Three Rivers, where the Machine Gun Training Center was, for
yeah.
our 3 months of special to arm.
Yeah.
And then I took a draft over in the end of May of 42.
Well, you were by this time a lieutenant.
I was just, yes.
Brand spanking
new. Brand spanking
new.
Yeah.
So when you went to Brockville, you went to the OTC there.
Yes.
Ah, same mm-hmm. here.
Did you?
Yeah, we're alumni. How about that?
La Loi Blanche, we used to call the CO.
No, who the...
Whitelaw.
No, the fellow we had, now this was... you see, I didn't get there until 43.
Oh, yeah.
He was a chap who's a VC.
Yeah, Milton Gregg.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was quite an experience.
Yes,
yeah.
Wasn't it?
But pleasant. You
oh,
know.
Yes, I know.
Yeah, good food.
Good, yes.
Lots of outdoors. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, my. Yeah.
Route marches galore.
Yeah. How true.
And then I went to a reinforcement center, machine gun reinforcement center, near Crookham Crossroads.
Yeah.
And spent a month or so there, and then eventually got to the battalion.
Mm-hmm.
And served with them until it was broken up in March of 44. And this is when Monty decided that we were 32nd Recce, Royal Montreal Regiment, Army Recce.
Mm-hmm.
Infantry Recce, but Army.
Yeah.
So we were really had no business. We were superfluous. And we were one of the units broken up in order to provide enough reinforcements.
Is that right? So you didn't get over to Normandy?
Yes, but not...
Not with the unit?
The battalion was broken up, which created a terrible stir back in Montreal.
Oh, I'll bet.
So much of a stir that they instituted one company of Royal Montreal Regiment to be headquarters, 1st Canadian Army Defense Company.
Yeah.
And they took over from... We took over from the Warren Scots.
Ah, yeah, yeah.
Remember,
yeah.
They were doing
yep.
defense company
yep.
work. And we took over Army headquarters. And by this time, we'd all been shipped out. Jim Tedley had gone to the BCRs and various officers.
Oh, Jim was in the...
Yes,
the,
he was in the
Army. Got
yeah.
it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I went to the 17th Hussars. And while I was there, I was only there a couple of weeks, when my old company commander said to me, they're reforming a company. Would you like to come back? Headquarters Defense Company. Well, I wasn't too keen. And he said, look, there's going to be an armored car troop. And it'll be the general's bodyguard.
Yeah.
You'll take them down to the front.
Yeah.
And then guard them and take them back. Well, maybe that's not such a bad
yeah.
job. You know, nice, go down the front during the day, but a nice, quiet place at night.
Right.
So I thought, oh, sure. So this is, I went. And we were the only armored, the rest had reverted to infantry. And I was still the armored car troop commander. And we had 3 Humber scout cars.
Well, now, at the time when you went to the company,
mm-hmm.
was that still in England, or had that
still
gone
in England?
Oh, I see.
Oh, yes.
This
was
see.
April. I'm
24.
Not sure. I'd have to look up
right
to see,
yeah.
but it was about April.
Yeah.
And we had a big ceremony at Leatherhead, was it? The headquarters of Leatherhead. change of the guard.
Yeah.
And all that sort of thing. And then we were issued Staghounds, armored cars.
Yeah.
They changed their minds. We went through all the degreasing, and they changed their minds and issued Cumbers, which were a little narrower on their own. And we had a white scout car and a half-track, international half-track, full of wireless for the general
yeah.
communication.
Yeah.
And we got all that together, got them all waterproof, went and fired the guns on the range.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually we went over with the general's vehicles, that his TAC headquarters,
mm-hmm.
on D plus 10, I guess it was.
Mm-hmm.
And went to Ambly.
Yeah.
And we just set up, you know, Ambly, beautiful spot.
Yeah.
And he wasn't the Army commander yet, or he didn't
have
any troops under him.
That was it. He was the Army commander, but
without any troops.
Without the Army wasn't operational.
That's right.
That's right.
That's right. And he didn't use us much. He used us a couple of times.
Where did he stay normally, by the way? Well, was he in, just as a, you know, little detail, was he in a farmhouse, in a chateau?
No,
or
he was
in
his
caravan.
In
his own caravan.
In the most beautiful spot you could imagine. It really was beautiful. There was a little stream that wound through the place, and there was what I suppose you could call it a gallop with lovely trees. So, thought. And there were there was his caravan and the his office,
mm-hmm.
trailer, and then I guess there were a couple of other caravans belonging to old General Walford, and Churchman I think had his there too, and then it went down until eventually it got to my scruffy tin.
Yeah,
cars. It was a beautiful spot. Beautiful horses out in the field.
Is that right?
Oh, German horses, I guess they must have been.
Yeah.
And a few cows. It was the most idyllic setting you could imagine.
Yeah.
And very quiet, too.
Yeah.
Except at night.
Right.
And you got a lot of ack-ack.
Yeah.
And the tinkle, tinkle, tinkle.
All the falling on down. Yeah,
but
yeah,
that
yeah.
was all. The Germans, aircraft were only visible at night.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it was an ideal. And I kept getting these letters from my wife saying the buzz bombs are getting to be. I was sitting in a nice safe.
Well, you got married in England, did you?
No, we were married in 1941 in Montreal. But my wife went over in the Red Cross.
Ah, I see.
About 15 months later.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So we had a short time together during which time she got pregnant.
Yeah.
And so she served for about 6 months in the Red Cross in London.
Yeah.
Remember the Officers Club in London?
Yeah.
She was in there. And then, of course, she couldn't get back because they stopped all travel.
Yeah.
So the baby, our daughter was born in England.
Yeah.
In Horsham.
Yeah. Well, now, let's hold it right there for a minute, if I can ask you some questions. The company would be what, about 100 men?
Oh, it was a bit bigger than that.
It was a little bit stronger.
Yeah. I had, as I say, the three, just three scout cars, the half-track and the white scout car.
Yeah.
So I had, a crew of very small troop.
Mm.
I forgot the exact numbers.
Mm.
And then the company was about 150 strong, I would think.
So they had the sort of the armored troop plus the three normal platoons?
Yeah, and they did guard duties.
Yeah.
In various spots.
Yeah. And who was the chaplain command of the...
That's awful.
Well, if it comes to you later,
we'll
get his name, but it's not essential.
Yeah.
So there you are in Ambly. Now, also in Ambly at this time, for a little while at least, if I remember correctly, wasn't Guy Simmons there also before? I think for a while, the Army and Corps headquarters
were close together.
Were close together.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, as I recall, he wasn't too far away. But
yeah.
I can't recall exactly where he was.
Yeah. probably in the neighborhood.
Oh, yeah. Not more than a mile or so away, I would think.
Yeah.
And Monty's headquarters, I think.
That's right.
Too far away either.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
You're right.
And I think it was, you know, a case of setting up and slowly. The Army headquarters, bits came over.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, the general used to go out and do visit troops.
Oh, yeah. It's that one. Yeah.
Okay.
One thing I want to get some idea from you, and I think you were just about to launch into it, is some idea of the general, not only his personality, but shall we say his daily routine, to the extent that you remember it.
I know we had a terribly boring time because he didn't use us as the armory cars.
Yeah.
The troops. There are too many vehicles on the road in the first place.
Yeah.
And, you know, a convoy of four vehicles, armored vehicles, when there was that much traffic on the road, I think he just found we were cumbersome.
Yeah.
And he really didn't need that protection.
Yeah.
Because we, it wasn't that, unless you were well forward at battalion, well, you weren't going to get any.
Yeah.
So it wasn't going to be a breakthrough. So he didn't use us very much.
And he rode a Jeep most of the time,
yeah,
didn't he? And indeed drove it, I gather.
He loved to drive. And he wasn't a top-notch driver. But when I became his ADC, we'd go out every day. And I'd have to prepare the map, find out where he wanted to go,
mm-hmm.
and trace it on the map. And off we'd go with the Jeep. The driver would sit in the back.
Yeah, yeah.
Ratson was his name. Hell of a good driver. And two outriders driving Harleys. Military police.
Yeah. Ah, yeah, yeah.
And they were good. One was an older fella, and then there was a young fella. But they were good because I would read the map and tell them where we were going ahead of time. They had a little map stapled to their panel on their motorcycle.
Mm-hmm.
And how they did it, I don't know, but they very seldom made mistakes.
Yeah.
And they would always look over their shoulder, and I would point a right fork or left fork. And it worked very well.
Well, where would you be in this convoy?
We'd just be the two motorcycles and the Jeep itself.
But would you be with the general?
Yes. I'd be sitting beside him. He'd drive.
Oh, I see. I see.
Well,
yeah.
He drove all the time.
Yeah, I didn't know whether you'd be in one of your Staghounds
When I became his ADC, I think we only went out once. By this time, another officer had taken over. And
But you're not his ADC yet?
Not yet. Well, I see. Before the odd time he did use us, he would ride in one of the out cars.
Yeah.
He'd ride either the half track or the scout car. It was mostly the white scout car because the half track was slow.
Yeah.
And these were full of wireless.
Mm.
And I remember once we went down to the outskirts of Caen. It was after the battle at Buron, I guess.
Yeah.
It was pretty messy.
Yeah.
Yeah. We went down there, and that was as far forward. It was a bit more far, not so much, but it was cumbersome. I can see why he didn't like using us. Plus, I suppose if anyone did see us, it was pretty obvious.
Yeah.
It was a high-ranking
officer. Flag flapping in the mudguard.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He normally always flew the flag, yeah. And he wore his red hat.
Yeah.
He didn't, he wore the beret once.
I've never seen him. Or at least, I've never seen even a picture of him.
With a beret?
With a beret.
Neither have I, because I think he found that he looked better in the hat.
Yeah.
Or the cap.
Yeah.
And I only saw him wear it once.
Mm-hmm.
What would his daily routine be, though, you know, on a, if there was such a thing as a normal day?
I think, he rose fairly early, and we were on the road, I would think, by 8:30 or 9. It was pretty damn early, as I recall, because I used to have to get up early, and Maury and I would prepare the map and get it ready. And we'd go equipped to go for the day. In other words, it would be a flask of coffee and a little satchel of sandwiches, you know, and off we'd go.
Do you want to put that?
And we'd go to one of the Corps headquarters, normally two Corps.
Yeah.
Or the British Corps.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know. He normally said, all right, go off to the ops room and bring your map up to date.
Mm.
And I would get the latest information on the map to take back to his headquarters as to where the red line was.
Yeah.
And any other little messages he wanted or any other information he wanted, I would do that while he was talking to General Simmons or General Dempsey. We would go to Div headquarters, and occasionally to brigade, and once in a blue moon, I suppose, down to battalion headquarters. It all depends on what he wanted to do.
Yeah.
Now, this was initially. Then he got an aircraft, and he loved flying. And he had two aircraft. He had a Vigilant, which was a high-powered... it was called the L-11 or L-19.
Yeah.
It was a very high-powered radial engine, but it was a stall-type aircraft. It could land on a postage stamp and very short takeoff. And he used that a lot. And his routine would be to set off in the aircraft, and I would go on ahead in the Jeep with the outriders and meet him at a field, designated field, and then drive him around the area. And this saved him a lot of time.
Yeah.
Plus, it gave him a good view of the area and on the front. He was a pretty brave guy. He'd, more than once, he came home with bullet holes, whether they were our own or enemy bullet holes, but he used to fly pretty low, apparently. And this saved him a lot of time. His routine would be we'd stop somewhere for sandwiches. Or rarely would we have a meal at another headquarters. Normally he was going out to see something. He liked to stop somewhere, and we'd just stop by the side of the road and have sandwiches and cigarettes. He used to carry his cigarettes and in a Benson and Hedges tin, remember those red tin things?
Yeah.
Battered old Benson and Hedges tin thing. I don't know, I guess it fitted into his pocket.
Yeah.
And,
did he smoke a lot?
Well, not all that much. He never smoked while he was driving.
Yeah.
And I used to be terrified when I first started because I was so afraid of making a mistake, you know, driving into the enemy.
right.
But he was very considerate. The first day, he said, now look, anytime you don't know where you are, you stop me, and we'll sort it out.
Yeah.
And he made sure. He said, now be sure to do this.
Yes, I'll bet.
So it wasn't very long before one day we were going down to Two Div, and I couldn't find where we were on the map. So I stopped. Fine. Let me have the map. He looked at it. We're here. And off we went again. But this was good. He could be charming when he wanted to, you know. But once I was his ADC, I was brought before him, and he said, I understand you're going to work with us.
Yeah.
I said, yes. Fine. See you in the morning. Next morning, it was all business. There was no very cold.
Yeah, did you replace Finn or not?
No, Finn and I worked together.
Oh, I see.
The chap, I replaced another chap who went on staff. And this was in August of 44.
Yeah. How was he with the troops, in your opinion? I mean, you have various styles.
Yeah.
You have the Patton style, the Montgomery style.
He wasn't like either. He was sort of, I think he was probably a shy person. He was always very pleasant. I only saw him really annoyed that once we were driving along the road, and there was a British engineer corps working on the road.
Yeah.
And they weren't working terribly hard. And he stopped the car. Go and get that officer. I went and this officer back to the car. He tore a hell of a strip up for not working hard enough. It's the only time I've seen him unpleasant. I think when he was dealing with senior officers under him, he was always, there was never any hint that he was displeased with them that I could.
Yeah.
You know, he was careful not to make it unpleasant in front of someone else.
Yeah.
So I didn't know whether he was unhappy with them or not. He didn't speak much in the car. He didn't never discussed anything.
Mm-hmm.
I remember he would say to me, what's that unit over there? We'd go by. And,
mm-hmm.
and I would, if I knew,
mm-hmm.
which I hardly ever did, I would tell him. And I'd usually say, sorry, sir, I don't know. But I'll find out. But the first time I said, I don't know, he said, always question everything. Never take anything for granted. You know, what are they doing there?
Mm.
And that was a good lesson. Never take anything for granted. Always question.
What do you ever, on these various trips back and forth, shall we say, meeting some troops on a route march or here, there, and the other, had sort of stopped, talked to them?
Occasionally he would, yeah.
Occasionally?
Yeah. Chat. Have a quick chat. But he didn't have the same sort of soldier's touch as Eisenhower.
Yeah. Yeah.
Monty. He was more reserved.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What used to please him? Can you ever remember any time when he was particularly happy? You know, obviously happy.
Yeah. I can't think of anything. I think he was a pretty meticulous guy, so he liked things to be orderly.
Yeah.
He was very orderly himself, and always very well turned out.
Yeah.
And in the mess, there wasn't much banter in a mess. Not like at Monty's. We went to lunch at Monty's once,
mm-hmm.
in the headquarters, and this was in Brussels.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'd heard of Monty, no smoking, no drinking, you know, but in his little family, consisting of the Gangon,
yeah.
and the Chavass and the Henderson, they were a little family. I was just, first of all, we walked in, and he was introduced to me, and he made some effort. He said, now, pronounce your name again. So I did. He said, I'll remember that. Now, would you like a drink? And the cigarettes are over there, if you'd like a cigarette.
I'll be damned.
And, you know, I was flabbergasted. And his ADC, we sat down at the table. We were just the general, Monty, I sat on Monty's left.
Mm-hmm.
And there was Chavass and Henderson and De Gangon. And we had lunch.
Mm-hmm.
And a great discussion during the meal. Monty defending a scientific education rather than a classic.
Mm-hmm.
Chavass was for the classic.
Mm-hmm.
And they were going at it hammer and tongs.
Yeah.
You know, here's the great man, and he's taking all this
yeah.
from this captain. But they were a very happy little family.
Yeah.
It wasn't anything like that in AMS. I remember Every once in a while. Church man, I can remember a church man one day at lunch. And I think he was a little fed up. I think he wanted a division.
Mm-hmm.
And he was not getting anywhere, and he started being a bit restless, and he started throwing a bun around across the table at, I don't know, one of the other brown fielders. I remember the general saying, here, none of that.
Yeah.
So there was no...
Yeah.
And they were a very pleasant bunch, and we were way below the salt, of course.
Yeah.
Tinley and I. And,
Churchman had certain eccentricities,
yeah,
didn't he?
Yeah.
In fact, he became... Well, he's gone.
Oh, he's gone.
Yeah, he's mentally now.
Too
yeah.
bad. But,
I've heard of this.
Yeah. Yeah, he used to ride me a bit, too. But it was all, I suppose, in good fun.
Yeah.
But they were... Brownfield was a very nice chap. So was... Jeanette. Brigadier Jeanette, the signal.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Colonel Beamont.
Yeah.
They would chat with us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Some of the others were a bit cold and distant.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you know, we were allowed to have a drink, I suppose, but I remember one thing. I used to have to watch the general. Keep my eyes on him at all times.
Mm.
And at noon, if he was back in the headquarters, he'd have a pink chin. And you'd have to watch him in case he wanted another one, because
mm-hmm.
he'd just go like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And at night, it was, I think, a scotch and soda.
Yeah.
And you had to keep your eye on him all the time to make sure that he yep. didn't have to call twice.
Yeah.
The other thing was, very shortly after, in August, or we were still in Ombly, I just remembered this when I read through my letters. I had to send back for my serge. We wore serge for dinner in the mess.
Well.
Yeah.
Well.
I'd forgotten this.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Now, one hears, of course, certain things about his relationship with Montgomery, which I gather were rather cool.
This has surprised me, because I didn't see the two of them together that often.
Yeah.
But I felt that they were very friendly to each other.
Yeah.
But then, perhaps they wouldn't show it in front of an ADC. Maybe when they were alone in the caravan
yeah.
together, there was a... But it was only one time when I ever saw a courier upset. And that was when I was late